I want you to close your eyes for a second. Just picture the Australian outback.
Okay.
Really visualize it. You know, it's vast, it's silent, and it is honestly just aggressively beige.
Yeah, absolutely.
We are talking millions of square miles of red dust, scrub brush, and just intense, unforgiving heat.
Right. It's one of the most rugged, traditionally masculine landscapes on the planet, really.
Right. Now, I want you to imagine dropping a nuclear bomb of glitter right into the middle of all that.
Oh, I love this visual.
Right. We're talking about a battered bus, painted lavender, carrying three drag queens screaming disco anthems at the top of their lungs, all while wearing dresses made out of flip-flops.
It's iconic.
It really is. And that image is the hook for today's deep dive. We are looking at Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Specifically, the musical adaptation.
Yes, the stage show. Because while most people probably know the 1994 movie,
Which is a cult classic in its own right.
oh, for sure. But the musical adaptation is what turned this story into a massive global industrial
It
complex.
really did.
So we have a stack of sources today. We're primarily looking at the Wikipedia entry for the musical, tracking its history from the original 2006 production all the way to where we sit right now in February 2026.
And we have a very clear mission for this deep dive. We
Well.
aren't just recapping the plot. We want to figure out how a, well, what they call a budget Barbie camper van became a Tony-winning juggernaut. And we also need to unpack a very specific and honestly quite heated controversy about whether the music in the show is fake or authentic.
Yes, that union fight is fascinating. And we also need to explain why, you know, more than 30 years after the story was originally written, a brand new tour just kicked off in the UK literally last week.
Yeah.
This isn't just some nostalgia trip, it's a current event.
Right. It's a story about lipstick and heels on the surface. But if you look at the structural analysis of the plot, it's mostly a story about resilience
Yeah.
and really redefining the concept of family.
So let's start with the vehicle itself. The show is named Priscilla, and Priscilla is the bus.
Correct. In the source material, the bus is effectively the fourth main character.
Wow.
It's the vessel for the entire journey.
But okay, here's my first question for you regarding the actual stagecraft.
Sure.
In a movie, you know, you just buy a bus and you drive it around the desert.
Yeah.
On a Broadway stage, you can't exactly rev a diesel engine and do donuts.
No, you definitely cannot.
So how do you put a road trip on a stage?
Well, it's a massive piece of engineering. In the original productions, this bus was a multi-million dollar prop.
Millions just for the bus.
Oh, yeah. It had to rotate a full 360 degrees, and it had to open up kind of like a dollhouse to reveal the interior living quarters.
Okay, so it's basically a transformer.
Basically, yeah. And crucially, it had to serve as a dance platform.
Right.
You have actors in 6-inch heels dancing on the roof of a moving set piece. The technical complexity of Priscilla the Bus is often overlooked just because it's dressed up to look like a piece of junk.
The budget Barbie camper van.
That's the famous line, exactly.
And inside this budget Barbie van, we have our core trio.
Yes.
You have Tick, who performs as Mitzi. You have Adam, the young, kind of brash firebrand who performs as Felicia. And then you have Bernadette.
Right, and Bernadette is really the anchor here. She's a transgender woman, she's older, she's wiser, and as the sources point out, she has absolutely been around the block.
She completely grounds the group.
She does.
And the setup is your classic road trip trope. They sign a contract to perform a drag show at a resort in Alice Springs.
And for some context, if you aren't super familiar with Australian geography,
Which I think is a fair assumption for a lot of people.
right, Alice Springs is in the dead center of the continent. It is thousands of kilometers from Sydney. It is isolation personified.
So they pack the wigs, they pack the heels, and they hit the road. But this is where we get to the real aha moment regarding the plot. On the surface, you know, it's just drag queens on a bus. But that's not the actual plot, is it? Because Tick isn't just going all that way for a paycheck.
No. And this is the emotional hook that makes the entire show work. Tick is married. Or, well, he was.
Right.
He has an estranged wife, Marion, who actually runs the casino in Alice Springs. But the bombshell, the thing he is hiding from his friends on the bus, is that he has an 8-year-old son named Benji.
Wait, and he's never met the kid?
He has not.
Wow.
And that changes the stakes entirely. He isn't just traveling across the desert to lip sync. He is traveling toward a really terrifying confrontation with his own identity as a father.
Yeah.
He is absolutely petrified that his son will see him in drag and just reject him.
That tension is just fascinating. You have this high camp of the road trip, You know, the bus breaking down, the lip syncing, the giant feathers all overlaid with this deep internal dread.
It balances the narrative perfectly. Because the road trip itself isn't just fun and games either. The source material is very clear that the musical preserves the darker elements of the original film.
We really have to talk about that. Because usually, I mean, when you turn a movie into a big, flashy stage musical, you sanitize it.
Right. You make it safe for the tourists.
Exactly. You take out all the grit.
Well, Priscilla actively resists that urge. The characters encounter genuine danger out there. There's a pivotal scene where the bus is vandalized.
Yeah.
They wake up to find hateful, homophobic slurs spray painted all over the side of their beloved bus.
Seeing that visceral hatred right in the middle of a fun disco musical, it really feels jarring.
It's supposed to be, if you don't show the real threat they face, their resilience doesn't mean anything.
Good point.
And the resolution to that scene is just iconic. Adam, the younger queen, he doesn't cry. He doesn't try to frantically scrub it off.
He gets a bucket of lavender paint.
Exactly. The song is Color My World. They paint the entire bus lavender. They literally cover the hate with fabulousness.
I love that.
It's the thesis statement of the show, really. You don't hide, you amplify.
And that resilience leads them to Bob.
Ah, yes. The mechanic.
I love the character of Bob.
Mm-hmm.
He's this rough around the edges, outback mechanic who steps in to fix the bus, but he ends up joining the tour.
Bob is crucial. He represents the widening of comfort zones, which is a key theme in the analysis.
How so?
Well, he's a straight man living in the middle of nowhere in this hyper-masculine environment, but he forms a genuine romantic connection with Bernadette.
Right.
It challenges that stereotype that acceptance and love for this community only exist in big liberal cities.
So we have the core plot down.
Mm-hmm.
Bus breaks down, paint it lavender, pick up a mechanic, go meet the sun.
Yep.
But we cannot talk about Priscilla without talking about the visual assault on the senses.
Assault is definitely the right word. It is pure visual maximalism.
The show actually won the Tony Award and the Olivier Award specifically for costume design.
Very deservedly.
The source material describes the aesthetic as village people meet Tim Burton.
It's a very specific, weird vibe.
Yeah.
The designers, Tim Chappell and Lizzie Gardner, who also did the movie costumes, by the way.
Oh, they did both?
They did. They went for something they called heightened drag. So it's not just a nice sequin dress.
Yeah.
It's a dress literally made out of flip-flops.
Yeah.
Or it's a dress that looks like a giant radioactive cupcake.
And the famous Gumby costumes, too.
Right. And the dragged-up koalas and roos. It's almost surrealism. But practically speaking, for the actors on stage, it is an absolute nightmare.
Oh, I can only imagine. The weight alone.
Yes. Some of these headdresses weigh significant amounts. You are dancing, singing, and balancing this 3-foot-wide structure on your head.
Wow.
And it acts like a sail, catching the wind every time you turn quickly. It requires incredible core strength.
So it's basically athletic competition disguised as camp.
Pretty much.
It sounds exhausting. But okay, let's pivot to the noise. We need to talk about the music.
Let's do it.
And this is where we probably need to define some terms for you, the listener.
Yeah.
The source calls Priscilla a jukebox musical.
Right.
For someone who maybe doesn't speak fluent Broadway, what does that actually mean?
So a jukebox musical is a show where the score isn't written originally for the plot. Instead, the creators take existing popular songs, usually from a specific era or a specific artist, and they shoehorn them into the story.
Like Mamma Mia.
Exactly. Mamma Mia is the most famous example, using the ABBA catalog.
And Priscilla uses pretty much everything else.
It uses the entire disco canon. We're talking I Will Survive, It's Raining Men, Go West, Hot Stuff.
I mean, it sounds like a guaranteed hit. You play the songs people already know and love.
You'd think so.
But the source material highlights a massive fight regarding the music. And it wasn't about which songs they played. It was about how they played them.
Yeah, this is honestly the most interesting part of the Broadway production history to me. It's where art crashes right into labor unions.
Let's get into it.
When the show moved to Broadway in 2011, the producers got into a full-blown war with the American Federation of Musicians, AFM.
Because they didn't want to hire a band.
Well, they didn't want to hire a full orchestra. The producers wanted to use a recorded string section.
Okay.
They wanted the violins and all those lush orchestral sounds to be on a hard drive, not down in the orchestra pit.
All right, I have to play devil's advocate here.
Go for it.
If I am paying $200 or $300 for a Broadway ticket,
mm-hmm.
I expect live musicians.
Right.
If I just wanted to hear a recording, I'd stay home and listen to Spotify. Why on earth did the producers think they could get away with that?
That was exactly the AFM's argument. They said it was a cheap, cost-cutting measure that cheated the paying audience.
Absolutely.
They argued that live theater inherently implies live music. They even picketed outside the theater. It was a really big deal.
So what was the producer's excuse? Because saying we want to save a few bucks usually doesn't fly in press releases.
No, they actually came back with a fascinating artistic defense.
Really?
Yes. They claimed that the artistic conception of Priscilla required a, and this is a quote, synthetic pop flavor.
Synthetic pop flavor?
Yeah.
Come on. That sounds like absolute marketing spin for we don't want to pay 20 violinists.
It really does sound cynical at first, doesn't it?
Highly cynical.
But, and hear me out here, if you take a step back, there is actually a grain of truth to it. Think about the source material. We are talking about disco, 70s and 80s pop.
Okay.
That music was heavily processed. It relied on early synthesizers, drum machines, and studio magic.
Right. It wasn't a symphony orchestra.
Exactly. It wasn't about the warm, acoustic, woody sound of a live cello. The producers argued that a traditional acoustic pit orchestra just couldn't replicate the specific, plastic, high-gloss sound of a disco club hit.
Wait, so they argue that being fake was actually more authentic to the genre?
Precisely. They argued that to be true to the aesthetic of drag, which, let's face it, is all about artifice, wigs, heavy makeup, and lip syncing, the music also needed that exact same layer of artificiality.
Wow. That is incredibly clever. I'm still not sure I buy it completely, but it is a brilliant argument.
It is a great defense.
Did they win?
Well, it was a bitter fight, but ultimately the show went on with the recorded elements included.
Fascinating.
It raises a huge question for you, though, thinking about it today. In 2026, we are so obsessed with authenticity. Everything has to be raw and real. But in this case, the producers were arguing that the fake version was the superior artistic choice.
It's almost like the uncanny valley of musicals. If it sounded too much like a prestigious classical orchestra, maybe it just wouldn't feel like a gritty drag show.
Exactly. It needed that punchy electronic edge to feel right.
Okay, so despite all the union battles and the picket lines, the show launches. It starts in Sydney in 2006.
Right.
And then it just goes everywhere.
The global footprint is staggering, honestly. It went to Melbourne, New Zealand, the West End in London in 2009, and then Broadway in 2011.
But then look at the list of non-English international productions. Italy, Brazil specifically, Sao Paulo, Sweden, Korea, Spain, Japan, South Africa.
It's massive.
But I'm kind of stuck on the cultural translation here. You take a show that is deeply, specifically Australian. I mean, it's about the outback. It features ruse. It uses heavy Australian slang like ocker.
Yeah.
You put that in front of an audience in Seoul or Stockholm. Does that actually work?
Surprisingly, it seems to. The humor in Priscilla is very dry, very Australian, sure. But the visual language of drag is universal.
That's true.
A man in a massive dress falling off a pink bus is funny in any language.
And I guess the music helps bridge the gap. I Will Survive is pretty much a global anthem.
It is, although there were some interesting adaptations depending on where it played. The source notes that in the UK tour, they actually had to cut the Madonna songs.
Really? Because of licensing?
Almost certainly. Madonna is notoriously expensive and very restrictive with her music rights. So in some versions of the show, you get Material Girl, and in others, you just don't. The jukebox literally isn't the same jukebox in every country.
That makes sense. And in the non-English productions, like in Italy or Spain,
yeah,
do they translate the big pop songs? Or do they still sing It's Raining Men in English?
Usually in jukebox musicals, the really big anthems stay in English if they are iconic enough. Or they get translated if the specific lyrics are essential to driving the plot forward. Right. But Priscilla occupies this weird middle ground.
How so?
Because the songs are often literal performances within the show. The characters are lip-syncing for an audience inside the reality of the play.
Oh, right. It's a show within a show.
Exactly. So keeping those performance numbers in English often makes perfect narrative sense, even in a translated script.
We really have to talk about the MVP of this global tour.
Yeah.
There is one name that appears in the source material over and over again.
Tony Sheldon.
Yes. He is to Priscilla what Hugh Jackman is to Wolverine.
That is a perfect comparison. He played Bernadette in the original Australian run. Then he packed up and went to the West End. Then he went to Broadway.
She stayed with it.
He did. He was nominated for an Olivier Award and a Tony Award for the role. He truly lived that character for years.
And what about Jason Donovan?
Ah, yes. A massive, massive draw for the UK audiences.
He played Tick, right?
He did, in the West End and on the UK tours. It's what the industry calls stunt casting, putting a really famous television or pop music name onto the poster to sell tickets.
But it worked.
It was incredibly effective stunt casting, yes.
Which brings us right up to today, because the timeline of our deep dive is February 2026. And this show is not dead. In fact, it's having a whole new resurgence.
It really is. If you are listening to this in the UK right now, you can literally go buy a ticket today. A brand new tour just kicked off last week, February 19th, 2026, starting in Manchester.
But The Source calls this specific tour a non-replica production. We should probably define that. What is the difference between a replica and a non-replica show?
Great question. So usually when a massive show like Priscilla or, say, The Phantom of the Opera goes on tour, it is a replica.
Meaning it's identical?
Exactly. It means the director, the choreographer, and the set designer are hired to copy the original Broadway or West End production exactly. Every step, every costume, every single lighting cue is identical to the original production Bible.
So it's like a franchise. Like a fast food burger. It tastes exactly the same in London as it does in Sydney.
That's a great way to put it. A non-replica production, on the other hand, means the producers have bought the rights to the script and the score, but they have hired a brand new creative team to design it entirely from scratch.
Oh, wow.
So new sets, new costumes, new blocking.
So this 2026 UK tour, the bus might look completely different.
It likely does.
The famous flip-flop dress might just be gone.
It could be. It allows the show to be fresher, maybe scaled down, maybe a bit grittier. It allows new directors to reinterpret the material for a 2026 audience rather than just blindly copying what worked back in 2006.
That's exciting. And who is leading this new version?
Kevin Clifton is playing Tick, and Adele Anderson is taking on the role of Bernadette.
Nice. And it's not just the UK either. The Source also lists a production in Tel Aviv that premiered in March 2025 and is marked as present, meaning it's likely still running right now.
It just shows that the global appetite for this story hasn't waned at all.
But we should probably mention that not every experiment with this property works.
No, they don't. We definitely have to mention the London experiment from 2024.
Right. Priscilla the Party.
Yes. This was a bold attempt to jump on the immersive theater bandwagon.
Like what they did with Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club.
Exactly like that. They set it up at a menu called Here at Outernet in London. The idea was that you could eat dinner, have some drinks, and the entire show just happened all around you.
Breaking the fourth wall completely.
It makes total sense on paper. I mean, Priscilla's a party. Why not put the audience in the party?
But it closed early.
It did. Financial difficulties. Immersive theater is just incredibly expensive to run on a nightly basis.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, people want to sit back and watch the drag queens. They don't necessarily want to be the drag queens while they're trying to eat their salad.
It's a fine line between entertainment and forced participation.
Very true.
So we have a show that has evolved from a quirky movie to a mega musical to an immersive party and now back to a non-replica tour. What is the real takeaway here? Why are we still talking about a broken down bus in the desert 30 years later?
Well, if we strip away the sequins and the controversy about the orchestra and all the budget Barbie jokes, we are left with that core scene between Tick and his son.
The meeting.
The meeting. The Source highlights the song Always On My Mind as the emotional pivot point of the whole show. You have this father absolutely terrified that his lifestyle makes him unlovable to his own kid.
Yeah.
And you have a son who just doesn't care.
Benji doesn't care about the dress or the makeup.
No, he just accepts his dad. That moment of unconditional love, that really simple, quiet connection amidst all the cacophony of disco, that is why the show works.
It grounds the fantasy.
Exactly. It's why it works in Seoul, in Sao Paulo, and in Manchester today. You can have a giant high heel shoe on the roof of the bus, but you absolutely need the heart inside the bus.
That's beautifully put.
And actually, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought on that synthetic debate we touched on earlier.
Oh, go for it.
We so often dismiss things that are camp or artificial as being shallow. We tend to think that serious, important art has to be gritty and real and played by acoustic instruments in a dimly lit room.
Right.
But Priscilla kind of argues that you can find profound, undeniable truth in the artificial.
That the lavender paint is just as valid as the rust underneath it.
Exactly. That sometimes you actually need this synthetic pop flavor to express an emotion that is just too big for boring reality.
Wow.
If a recorded synthetic strings section makes you cry just as hard as a live cello player, does the medium actually matter? Or is the feeling it evokes the only thing that really counts?
That is a really provocative thought. Maybe the fake, plastic, glittery world is actually the most honest one of all.
It certainly is a lot more colorful.
It definitely is. Well, that is all the time we have for this deep dive. Whether you are driving a bus through the Outback or just sitting in traffic on your morning commute, we hope you find your own Priscilla and paint your world whatever color you want. Thanks for exploring with us.
Safe travels, everyone.